Assalamu alaikum. My name is Salman Sheikh. I'm, for those of you who don't know me, I'm the director of the Brookings Doha Center. It's a great pleasure to welcome you to the center if this is your first time, and of course a great pleasure to invite you if you are a regular friend and visitor to the center. Let me also welcome, I can see just a handful of people on the Washington side. We'd invited a small select audience in Washington, but it's a pleasure to have the two of you. I suspect we'll have perhaps a few more through the course of our discussions. I am very, very excited to welcome the esteemed speakers tonight. Just before I do, just a little bit of background. The Brookings Doha Center, and to explain perhaps genesis of this particular discussion. The Brookings Doha Center has now a regular, what we call a transitions dialogue, which is really bringing together key political leaders and civil society leaders in the transition countries. We have had two transition dialogues over the last 8-9 months, which have involved Egyptians, Libyans, and Tunisians. And we are now in the middle. Today we've had the first day already of our first country-specific dialogue on Egypt. We had quite incredible, very interesting, very privileged discussion with Egyptians from across the political spectrum, discussing issues of transition, such as the constitution, the role of religion in public life, institutional reform and economic recovery. And we intend to continue this dialogue tomorrow. Some of the fruits of this transitions dialogue you'll see in our publications. I think the last report is out of the last dialogue in June, and which takes us to here today. At the table to discuss drafting the constitution, defining post-revolutionary Egypt, is, I think, three of the best people we could get to discuss this. On my left, to my extreme left, is Dr. Amar Daraj, who, of course, is the Secretary General of the Constituent Assembly, which is responsible for writing Egypt's next constitution. He's also the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee of the Freedom and Justice Party and a founding member of the Freedom and Justice Party. He's an engineer and has previously practiced in the US as well. On my right is an old friend, Ambassador Hisham Youssef, who was, of course, as many of you know, campaign manager for Dr. Amr Moussa's presidential cabinet campaign and chef de cabinet to Mr. Moussa in his capacity as Secretary General of the Arab League. Ambassador Youssef began his diplomatic career with the Egyptian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and has worked in various missions and embassies, including in Canada and the Egyptian mission to the World Trade Organization in Geneva. And to my immediate left is Hussam Bakhat, who's founder and executive director of the Egypt Initiative for Personal Rights. He is a leading defender, and I would stress a leading defender, of civil rights and liberties in Egypt and played a prominent role in Egypt's January 25th revolution. Before that, I think you had a career in journalism, which sparked an interest in your human rights concerns. Again, it's a great pleasure to have you here at a very interesting moment. 12-12-12 is a date that many of you may know, which is supposed to be the deadline date for the drafting of Egypt's first modern constitution. It is, judging by the discussions we've been having today, even today, it's throwing up a whole series of questions and issues related to practical matters, but also to the identity of modern-day Egypt and its society. I won't go on and on about this. I think we've got three great people to discuss this. I will start with Dr. Raj, please, if you could lay out for us where you see this process going. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Salman, for your introduction, and I would like to thank Brookings Institute in Doha for organizing this event. It gives me pleasure to be here with you. Although I was traveling from Egypt for another activity, I was hoping to talk about other things than the Constitution, because this is the only thing I've been talking about for the last 6 months. I talk about it in the assembly, I talk about it at home with my wife, with my children, I talk about it on TV, and of course with myself, you know, when I'm alone I talk about it, so I was hoping, but anyway, this is my destiny, so I will have to be talking with you about it again tonight. For the Constitution, in order to talk about it, I prefer to speak in Arabic for this, because maybe there are things that are easier to explain when it comes to some of the issues. If I talk in Arabic, and I trust that our distinguished translators will do a good job in conveying my statements to the respectful audience. How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
Okay. طبعا حضراتكم متابعين الموضوع بشكل قريب جدا. وبيظهر للكثير من الناس أنه الموضوع مشوب بتوترات وسجالات ونزاعات طول الوقت، لكن الحقيقة لو نظرنا للجانب الإيجابي من العملية، وده دايما أنا يعني maybe you can wait for a second.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I realize that you haven't all got them on your seats, so you just give one minute just for people to collect their headphones.
Okay. فإذا نظرنا إلى الجانب الإيجابي للموضوع، نجد إن الأول مرة في تاريخ مصر بلد عريقة في كتابة الدساتير، لكن لأول مرة الموضوع بيخرج بهذا الشكل واسع النطاق للشعب المصري، ومش بس الحقيقة الشعب المصري ولكن للعالم كله. يعني الاهتمام العالمي بموضوع كتابة دستور مصر الحقيقة بشكل غير مسبوق. يعني أنا يمكن لم أتابع عملية كتابة الدستور في أي بلد تانية مثلما يتابع العالم الآن عملية كتابة الدستور في مصر. الناس بتشعر لأول مرة أن أصبح في مصر أصبح لها دور حقيقي في صياغة مستقبلها، ودي طبعا هي الثمرة الرئيسية لثورة 25 يناير. احنا كنا حريصين في الجمعية انه الجمعية تكون مفتوحة لتلقي آراء الناس وتطلعاتهم واقتراحاتهم وتعليقاتهم على اللي احنا بنعمله، وطبعا أدى إلى مشاكل كتيرة بنتابعها على لكم بتتابعوها دائما معنا، يعني انه بعض الناس بتشير ان في ارتباك وفي ساعات تغيير في المسودات، وكل شويه تلاقي مسوده نازله الى اخره، وفي ساعات بعض التناقضات ما بين المسودات، لكن هو ده الامر الطبيعي لان احنا في عمليه مستمره من العمل، والعمل ده بيتعمل على الهواء يعني تقريبا يعني معظمه يعني، وبالتالي شيء طبيعي ان يبقى في تطوير لهذه المسوده، لكن المهم انه في يعني قابليه لكل مواطن في مصر ان هو يتداخل مع عمل جماعي ويتفاعل معها ويدي تعليقات حتى لو هي مش متعلقه بعمليه الدستور اصلا. وانا احب اشير لحادثه يعني كانت ليها دلاله بالنسبه لي شخصيا من اوائل ما بدانا نعمل. انا كنت حريص انه دايما اي شخص يشارك او يبعت تعليق او يبعت اقتراح وسايب وسيله اتصال ان احنا نتصل بيه عشان نشكره. فأحد الموظفين المساعدين معنا اتصل بالشخص عشان يشكره، فلا بيقول لي انا فوجئت ان الراجل بكى، فبيقول له ليه يعني لماذا تبكي يعني ايه اللي بيبكيك؟ قال له انا اول مره في حياتي يعني ابادر ان انا اسلم ورقه او اقتراح لاي جهه في مصر رسميه او غير رسميه وتؤخذ بهذا القدر من الجديه. انا ما يهمنيش تاخدوا بيها ما تاخدوش بيها، لكن انا بالنسبه لي يكفي انه في حد اهتم بيا واتصل بيا وقال لي احنا شاكرين على هذا الاقتراح. وده الحقيقه الواقع اللي احنا نحب ان احنا ننقله، وده جانب ايجابي اظن يعني ارجو انه الناس تكون منتبهه ليه. بالرغم من كل الجدل والسجال اللي هو بيحدث يعني. طبعا بدون شك زي ما حضراتكم متابعين انه كان في جدل كبير حوالين تشكيل الجمعيه. طبعا الجمعيه الاولى كان الجدل كان اكبر، لكن برضو لازال الجدل ده كان موجود. لكن الحقيقه احنا قالينا على انفسنا ان احنا ننقب نفسنا عن هذا الجدل ونستمر في العمل وناخد المهمه بتاعتها وننجزها الى ان يقضي الله امرا كان مفعولا. وفضل الله احنا بقالنا اكتر من 5 شهور بنعمل ونكاد ننجز هذه المسوده. فانا الحقيقه يعني قد لا يكون شيء ايجابي ان احنا نعود للجدل بتاع تشكيل الجمعيه وهل معبره او غير معبره، لان انا اظن ان ده يعني تم تجاوزه وينبغي التركيز فعلا على المنتج اللي خارج من الجمعيه، يعني نستفيد بالوقت لمناقشه هذا المنتج لكي نتاكد ان احنا ننتج دستور يعبر بافضل شكل ممكن عن المجتمع المصري. الحقيقه انا من وجهه نظري المشكله الرئيسيه اللي بتقابلنا في صياغه هذا الدستور ليست متعلقه بالدستور نفسه في حد ذاته. من وجهه نظري المشكله اساسا متعلقه بان هي سبقت او بتسبق مباشره عمليه انتخابيه ننتظرها في خلال 2 شهر بعد الانتهاء من صياغه الدستور. وبالتالي السجالات السياسيه ما بين القوى السياسيه والاحزاب المختلفه لقت لها ساحه خصبه جدا انها تمارس فيها العمل السياسي والسجال السياسي اللي هي بطبيعتها، يعني ده ما فيش فيه مشكله، يعني المفروض ما فيش مشكله ان يبقى فيه سجال سياسي ونقاش ونزاع وتدافع ما بين القوى السياسيه، لان هو ده مجال عمل القوى السياسيه، مجال عمل الاحزاب السياسيه. لكن المشكله ان ده اول ساحه ليه في غياب مجلس الشعب بقى ساحه الدستور والجمعيات التاسيسيه. وبالتالي اصبح كتير من الخلافات اللي حضراتكم بتسمعوا عنها وبتشوفوها في وسائل الاعلام وكده مش بالضروره بتعكس اختلافات جوهريه في مضمون الدستور بقدر ما هي بتعكس اختلافات سياسيه بين الاطراف اللي موجوده فيها وسعي لكسب اصوات الناخبين، اللي هي يعني هو ده الوضع الطبيعي بالنسبه لاي قوه سياسيه. فبتلاقي بقى في بعض المشاكل بتترتب على ذلك. على سبيل المثال تلاقي ممكن ان احنا نتوافق في الجمعيه على حاجه معينه بين قوى سياسيه مختلفه، وما تجد هذه القوى كلها بدون استثناء بعض الناس اللي كانوا موجودين في هذا التوافق يخرجوا ويصرحوا بغير كده، يعني ويزايدوا قدام الناس انه هذا الدستور سيكون كارثه في على سيرجعنا للخلف 10 سنين الى العصور الظلاميه، وحتى يقول هذا الدستور سيكون يعني اب علماني وسيبعدنا عن الشريعه وسيبعد، يعني بيبتدي بقى الناس تتكلم. كل سياسي بيخاطب الفئه اللي هو عايز يكتسبها من ناحيه سياسيه ليكسب أصواتها في الانتخاب. والسجال ليس فقط سياسي إسلامي غير إسلامي أو إسلامي ليبرالي أو لا، ممكن داخل القوى الإسلامية نفسها في سجالات مشتركة وداخل القوى الليبرالية نفسها، يعني كل حد بيحاول يكسب، يعني هو نزاع سياسي. فده مع الأسف انعكس سلبا على المناخ اللي بيوضع فيه الدستور وأثر بشكل كبير. عشان كده أنا عايز حضراتكم تستوعبوا هذه الحقيقة على الوقت موجود هناك كل يوم تقريبا فول تايم. كل الناس اللي بالمناسبة اللي بيشتغلوا في الجمعية متطوعين تماما بدون أي مقابل، لأنه دي مهمة وطنية يعني ينبغي أن تجرى بهذا الشكل. فإحنا يعني الواحد بقاله كل هذه الفترة وخلاص، أنا بقى عندي يقين أن المشكلة أساسا هي مشكلة بين القوى السياسية وساحة سجال سياسي أكتر ما هي منعكسة على الدستور، لأنه مجال الخلاف على الأعمدة الرئيسية اللي موجودة في الدستور أنا من وجهة نظري بسيط جدا. قد يكون في خلافات كتيرة في التفاصيل، يعني في تفاصيل كتيرة فيها اختلافات، والزملاء يمكن لما هيتكلموا هيحدثوكم عن بعض الاختلافات عن اللي ممكن يكون موجود في المسودات الحالية أو المسودة الأخيرة. لكن هل الخلاف خلاف جوهري في مفصل أساسي من عمود أساسي من أعمدة الدستور ولا لا؟ هل في خلاف على فعلا الهوية؟ انا ازعم انه مفيش خلاف اساسي على الهويه. قد يكون في خلاف على بعض التفاصيل او كيف تطبق هذه الهويه او تنعكس بشكل قانوني، لكن كل الناس في مصر بتقبل انه مبادئ الشريعه الاسلاميه هي المصدر الرئيسي للتشريع. هذا الموضوع يعني محسوب بما في يعني اسلاميين غير اسلاميين مسلمين مسيحيين كله يقبل هذا الكلام. لكن في تفاصيل بقى كيف نفسر المبادئ وكيف تنعكس هذه الى اخره، دي تفصيله، لكن المبدا او المفصل موجود. المفصل ان هو ضمان الحريات والحقوق باكبر قدر ممكن وبشكل اكثر تقدما عن اللي كان موجود عندنا في دستور 71، ده عمود رئيسي. في بعض التفاصيل ممكن نختلف عليها، لا أنا كنت شايف أن هذه الحرية يجب أن تكون أكبر هنا، هذا الحق ليس يعني مفعلا بالشكل الكافي، نختلف بقى ونتفق على ذلك، برضو هذه تفاصيل. إحنا متفقين أيضا على أنه ينبغي أن يكون في توازن ما بين السلطات، ما بين الأطراف المختلفة في السلطات الموجودة في الدولة، سواء السلطة التنفيذية ممثلة في الرئيس أو الحكومة مجلس الوزراء، أو مع السلطة التشريعية أو مع السلطة القضائية. هذا المبدأ موجود، استقلال القضاء موجود، ولكن نيجي بقى تفاصيل كيف نحقق هذا، يعني هذا التوازن بين السلطات. لا، في تفاصيل كثيرة جدا نختلف ونتفق عليه بدون شك، لكن هل هذا يعني اختلاف على المفاصل الرئيسية؟ أنا من وجهة نظري لا. طب هل بقى كنا نتوقع أن ما يبقاش في خلافات أصلا في صياغة الدستور؟ يبقى احنا بنضحك على نفسنا، لأنه بدون شك لو كان في توافق بنسبة 100% من أول يوم كان يكفي تعيين شخص واحد يقعد يكتب الدستور كله خلاص، الناس بقى متفق عليه. لكن طبيعي ان يبقى في جمعيه ويبقى في عدد كبير من الناس، والناس دي مختلفه وتتفاعل وتتحاور وتختلف وتحتد في الكلام، والموضوع يبقى جدل مجتمعي. كل ده هو التفاعل اللي احنا نطمع ان هو يوصلنا بافضل شكل ممكن لافضل يعني مسوده للدستور في ضوء الظروف اللي احنا فيها دلوقتي. يعني قد لا نصل إلى الدستور الأمثل اللي نتمناه فعلا بعد ثورة 25 يناير اللي بيعبر عن أكبر قدر من التوافق، ممكن يعني يبدو لي أن ده مش بالضرورة هيكون الحال، يعني ممكن يكون الدستور في حالة جيدة إلى حد كبير، لكن ليس بالضرورة هو اللي بيعبر عن حالة رضا مجتمعي وتوافقي بنسبة 100%. لكن النقطة، هل إحنا محتاجين يعني في ظل الظروف الموجودة دلوقتي دي أن إحنا نحقق هذا التوافق بنسبة 100% الناس كلها تبقى راضية؟ أنا برضو أزعم أنه مش بالضرورة. ليه؟ كذا سبب. السبب الأول أنه طبيعة الأمور أنه في اختلافات بين الناس، يعني لا يمكن ترضى الناس عن كل حاجة مع بعض يعني. الحاجة الثانية أن إحنا في هذه المرحلة الحقيقة نحتاج فعلا لدرجة مهمة من الاستقرار السياسي ينبني عليها بعد كده استقرار اقتصادي وتنمية اقتصادية، يعني لأنه مصر الحقيقة الأوضاع فيها دلوقتي يعني ليست مرضية نتيجة أشهر طويلة مرت منذ الثورة وقدر من سوء إدارة المرحلة الانتقالية، أوصلنا إلى مشاكل كثيرة. فمصر لا تتحمل أن يستمر هذا الصراع وهذا الجدل لشهور وشهور أخرى، إن إحنا دلوقتي مش هنقدر نحقق التوافق، طب ما خلينا نمد علشان نحقق هذا التوافق، طب نغير الجمعية، طب ناخد 6 شهور تانية. وما ظنش إن الوضع هيختلف إذا تم هذا يعني. وبالتالي مهم جدا ان احنا ننتج هذا الدستور بالحد الادنى اللي نستطيع ان احنا ننتجه به، وبعد ذلك احنا وضعين الاليه اللي تكفل لينا وتكفل للمصريين يعني تغيير هذا الدستور اذا ارادوا او عندما يريدوا. كان الاول كان موضوع اقتراح بشرط انه على الاقل 5 سنوات او 10 سنوات لكي ينظر في تعديل الدستور، فاحنا قررنا ان احنا نشيل هذا الشرط عشان الموضوع يبقى مفتوح. يعني اول ما يتضح انه في احتياج لمناقشة أي تعديل في مواد دستور يتم هذا، بس يكون على هدوء بقى بعد ما كل الأوضاع استقرت، الأوضاع السياسية استتبت، أصبح عندنا مجلس شعب وبرلمان ينتج تشريعات ويتيح بقى للتقدم، لأنه الدنيا واقفة ما فيش تشريعات بتحصل، والرئيس متحرج أنه يستخدم السلطة اللي في يده لإصدار تشريعات، لأنه يعني تبقى إيده مطلقة في إصدار التشريعات يعني، وده شيء طبيعي لأنه صعب جدا يتحمل كل هذه المسؤوليات التنفيذية بالكامل وأيضا التشريعية بالكامل. فإحنا يعني نريد فعلا أن إحنا ننجز، وبعدين إحنا يعني ما أخذناش وقت قليل، يعني إحنا أوريدي بقى لنا أكتر من 5 شهور وداخلين على 6 شهور. إحنا ما كناش نظن في الأول أن إحنا هنستهلك 6 شهور بالكامل، ولكن يبدو أنه هذه هي حتكون الحالة. طيب، فده شيء مهم جدا. السؤال لما بنيجي نتكلم على النقط الأساسية اللي هي من ضمن المشاكل اللي تسبب فيها عملية تشكيل الجمعية إلى آخره، إنه اضطرت القوى السياسية إنها تلجأ إلى ما يشبه الحصص في تشكيل هذه الجمعية، وبالتالي صنف الناس على إنه في مجموعة منهم إسلامية، نص المجموعة بتصنف بين قوسين إسلامية، والنصف الآخر بيصنف بمصطلح إن هو بين قوسين مدنية. وانا حقيقه انا هذا التصنيف يعني انا وانا داخل الجمعيه غير مرتاح لي، يعني هي دي الظاهر طريقه يعني تم الوصول ليها لكي نستطيع ان ننجز تشكيل هذه الجمعيه. يتفق البعض او يختلفوا، بس هي دي طريقه انجازت تشكيل الجمعيه، والناس قالت خلاص هنتكل على الله. بس انا ما كنتش مرتاح، انا شخصيا بقى ما كنتش مرتاح. ليه؟ لان انا مش معترف اصلا بهذا التقسيم. بمعنى ايه؟ بمعنى انا لما بنظر لنفسي، انا مرجعيتي اسلاميه وبنتمي لحزب الحريه والعداله، وهذه المرجعيه واضحه طبعا عندنا. لكن انا برضو ازعم ان انا ده لا يتناقض مع المدنيه، لانه يعني انا لا يعني انا ضد الدوله الدينيه اللي بيسيطر فيها رجال الدين على عمليه الحكم واتخاذ القرار، وانا ضد الدوله العسكريه اللي بيسيطر عليها الجيش او المؤسسه العسكريه بيتدخل في الحياه السياسيه، وبالتالي بامتياز انا اعتبر نفسي مدني. فتدخلني ليه في التصنيف ده وما دخلنيش في التصنيف ده؟ ده انا كمان ازعم ان انا في جزء مني ليبرالي، لان انا منفتح على الناس وبتحاور مع الجميع وبتقبل الراي الاخر، يعني ده جانب ليبرالي فيا. وفي جانب يساري ان انا يعني مع العداله الاجتماعيه، هدف رئيسي من اهداف الثوره، ومع حقوق الفقراء، ومع تضييق الفجوه الكبيره ما بين الفقراء والاغنياء، اللي هو ده الاستقطاب الحقيقي في المجتمع فعلا، مش الاستقطاب السياسي، الاستقطاب الحقيقي اللي هو ما بين القوى يعني الاقتصاديه اللي موجوده بين الاغنياء والفقراء. وبالتالي انا بعتبر ان انا في حته يساريه، وده هو وضع كنا بنتكلم النهارده، هو ده الحقيقه وضع معظم المصريين كده. كل مصري هتلاقي التوليفه دي موجوده فيه، هذه التركيبه موجوده فيه بدرجات مختلفه. فاحنا كنا نصنف بدايه، نصنف الناس ان ده اسلامي وده غير اسلامي، ده تصنيف حقيقه غير صحيح. نفس الخطا بنقع فيه لما بنتكلم على، واحنا بنتكلم على مناقشة الهوية ومناقشة الدستور، وبنقول لما بنيجي نتكلم على موضوع مبادئ الشريعة الإسلامية أو الشريعة الإسلامية، كما لو كان الإسلام منحصر بس في هذه المادة وفي تفسير كلمة مبادئ، وفي المادة بتاعة المرأة بما لا يخالف أحكام الشريعة الإسلامية. هو يعني المناقشة حول الشؤون الإسلامية انحصرت في هذه المواد، وبعد ذلك خلاص بقيت المواد بقى مواد يعني مواد عادية مدنية لها علاقة بمواثيق دولية، ولها علاقة بالقوى المدنية، ولها علاقة بالعصر الحديث والتقدم إلى آخره يعني. وأنا حقيقة برضو بزعم، وده يعني أظن كثير من حضراتكم اتفقوا معايا، أنه ليس بالضرورة أنه يكون أنه كل شيء غير المواد المادتين ثلاثة دول. لأنه هل الإسلام لا يعالج أو لا يتحدث عن حقوق الإنسان؟ هل الإسلام لا يتحدث عن الحريات؟ هل الإسلام ما بيقولش إن السلطة للشعب فعلا؟ هل الإسلام ما بيدي سلطة مطلقة للحاكم؟ هل الإسلام ده مش بيوجد الآليات اللي هي توجب مكافحة الفساد، زي ما احنا بنتكلم عن مثلا هيئة مستقلة لمكافحة الفساد؟ فكل هذه الأمور موجودة أيضا في المرجعية اللي احنا بنرجع ليها وبنحتكم بيها، اللي هي مقبولة من الشعب المصري على مدار مئات السنين. وبالتالي كل هذه الأمور الحقيقة خلت أنه يبدو للناس من الخارج أن الموضوع معركة إسلامية علمانية أو إسلامية ليبرالية، وده غير حقيقي. إحنا المفروض الحقيقة كان يبقى تركيزنا وإحنا بننتج هذا الدستور أن إحنا فعلا نحكمه بحيث أنه هو يعبر عن توازن في السلطات، يعبر عن نهاية عصر الاستبداد، يعطي حقوق، يعطي حريات إلى آخره. هل نجحنا بنسبة كبيرة من واقع المنتج دلوقتي؟ أنا أظن نجحنا بنسبة كبيرة، ولكن ليس كما كنا نطمح في البداية، نتيجة هذه المعارك اللي هي ساعات كتيرة كانت بتاخدنا بعيد عن المسار السليم. لكني لازلت أزعم الحقيقة أن دستور اللي هيطلع إن شاء الله أفضل كثيرا بمراحل كثيرة جدا عن الدستور اللي كان موجود عندنا، دستور 71، وأنه يعني يحقق أساس طيب يستطيع أنه نتفق عليه عشان ننطلق منه إلى تحقيق نوع من الاستقرار، ونبدأ عملية التنمية. وممكن بعد عدد من السنوات نبتدي نراجع مثلا هل النظام السياسي يمكن يبقى أفضل، نتجه إلى نظام برلماني بدل ما نكون نظام مختلط زي ما يكون الآن إلى آخره. ففي أمور كثيرة ممكن أنها تراجع بعد ممارسات تخلينا ننطلق فعلا على طريق مستقر في أعقاب ثورة 25 يناير. أشكر حضراتكم، وإن شاء الله المناقشة يبقى فيها مجال أكثر لكم.
Thank you again, Dr. Amaran, and again, it's a great privilege to have you here. Ambassador Yusuf, if I could ask you to speak, please.
Thank you very much. I prepared my notes in English because we were told that we were going to speak in English and for the benefit of those who do not speak Arabic and in order to have a balance, so one will speak in English and one will speak in Arabic. And Hussam, will divide his speech into two halves. Well, let me start by saying that the environment in which this constitution is being drafted is a very difficult environment. It is an environment of deep polarization. And it is also an environment in which there is a feeling of lack of trust and suspicion between the different political forces in Egypt. And as Amr Darag was saying, there is a cloud of doubt over the genesis of the Constitutional Assembly. And huge objections also on the decision-making process of this Constitutional Assembly, which is also a crucial issue. And finally, it is also taking place at a time when we are going to have a parliamentary election that immediately follows the writing of the Constitution. In this environment, I think this would have necessitated that we have an attitude, a philosophy, and an approach that differs from what we are witnessing now. So the attitude should have been an attitude of reconciliation. Instead, the attitude that we see is a confrontational attitude. The philosophy should have been a philosophy of inclusion. Instead, what we see is a philosophy that is based on whoever is not satisfied is wrong and is going against the feeling of the majority. And the approach was supposed to be based on consensus. And instead, we have an approach that is based very close to imposition and brinkmanship. And that things will pass by hook or by crook, and at the end of the day, we can vote in the Constitutional Assembly, and we have a comfortable majority that would allow things to move in a specific direction. One of the ministers in the current cabinet, Minister Mahsoub, said something that I think should have been the guide for this process. He said that the revolution did not erupt, neither to turn Egypt into a secular state, nor into an Islamic state. So our objective is neither to secularize nor Islamize Egypt. But this is not what is taking place. And as you probably know, perception is sometimes more important than reality. And the prevailing perception in Egypt is that this constitution is written in the context of a battle between those who support Sharia and those who oppose Sharia, while this is absolutely not the case. There is another prevailing perception that the time will not be enough. And that more time may be needed. But there are those who believe that, well, more time will not result in a huge difference. As far as I'm concerned, this is not a law that can be changed by Parliament. This is a constitution that requires a very lengthy and complicated process to amend, rectify, or modify. And it requires precision, clarity, coherence, and consistency. Even there are those who are close to the Muslim Brotherhood who believe that this constitution in the time framework left for its completion will be half-baked, and that there isn't enough time to discuss it in the Constitutional Assembly itself, let alone to have a debate in society about the final draft. There is another prevailing view as well, and perception, that there is a sense of confusion, if not even chaos, in the process. People were not sure about which draft we are talking about. What is the latest in relation to one provision or one article at one point or another? And while people were talking about one article, it turned out that it was deleted, and the new one was in place, and so on. So I believe that the process could have benefited from a much better management of the flow of information and consultation with the public, as well as with different interest groups. And finally, there are those who believe that the Constitution in its current form does not reflect the spirit of the Egyptian Revolution. It is not a modern constitution in some of its elements, and it is not a constitution that will be admired by the whole world. It's not an institution that will inspire countries that have similar culture or similar religious affiliations like Egypt. And since I am an Egyptian diplomat, I would have rather had a constitution that Egyptians would be proud of all over the world. Not a constitution that accepts the bare minimum of what can be achieved today. I had much more ambitions as a result of what I've seen in the Egyptian Revolution. I would have rather had a constitution that addresses human rights, democracy, balance of powers between different forces in the most modern way, and also address the aspirations of the Egyptian people. But I will also have to agree with Ahmed Arag, in all fairness, that this was a drafting process that was transparent, in the sense that people were talking about the Constitution day in and day out in almost every single political program that you can think of in Egyptian TV. It was a drafting of a Constitution live, as we see it in football games. The main pillars of any Constitution, to identify the identity of the country, the foundation of society, and its culture, to identify the rights and freedoms of its people, and the balance of powers between the different executive, parliament, and judiciary, and the checks and balances between them. Ahmed Arag was arguing that we do not have fundamental differences. I'm not sure that I would agree totally with that. I think we have difficulties in the three pillars of the Constitution. There is a battle over the Sharia and the role of Sharia, which is the pillar related to identity. There are battles related to freedom of worship, rights of women, and other areas related to rights and freedom. And there are questions in relation to the independence of the judiciary and the balance of power between the different political forces at the national level. And this is why the kind of objections that we have seen to the draft of the Constitution were serious objections. When we have 11,000 judges objecting to elements pertaining to the role of the judiciary, and even threatening not to supervise the referendum or the coming parliamentary elections, then that is serious. Of course, women's groups were very active in the last few weeks, and they succeeded at the end of the day in deleting one of the paragraphs that they were having problems with. But also a number of accountability institutions and regulatory bodies had difficulties with the Constitution and the supervisory role of these institutions. The Army had some difficulties. The Liberals inside the Constitutional Assembly, let alone those who decided not to participate in its activities. Even the writers' syndicates and many others had fundamental difficulties with the Constitution. And people have the feeling that they were not really convinced about some of the arguments that were presented, perhaps to be fair, on both sides of the debate, whether from the Islamic forces in relation to why the formulation pertaining to Sharia is not adequate at this point in time, and also some aspects of the liberal discourse that was presented in the last few weeks. And we continue to have differences over the role of an institution like Al-Azhar. And this is serious. There are many who are fearful that having the Azhar enter into political debates and having opinions that may be subject to severe political criticism from one party or another, or having Al-Azhar have one point of view at this point in time and then changing its mind as a result of changes in Al-Azhar, that this may create a chaotic situation that we can avoid. And there are those who also have some suspicions in relation to some of the articles in the Constitution that they are included for specific political purposes. I am not of this belief. But there are those who believe that there is an article in the Constitution, for example, that is put there only to deal with the issue of the Attorney General because there was a failure in removing the Attorney General. As I said, I am not of this view, but this is only to reflect the kind of suspicious nature and environment in which this issue is addressed. There are also those who are critical of the formulation in relation to the role of the army, and they see that it is very similar to a formulation that appeared during the months that preceded the revolution and were contained in the Silmi document, and it had huge objections, even demonstrations by millions, including the Muslim Brotherhood, who were against these formulations, and then we see similar formulations in the current draft. There are other issues pertaining to human trafficking and other details that are important and require changes that perhaps are not as fundamental as the other elements that I spoke about. In conclusion, let me say that the main challenge that will face the Constitutional Assembly is whether they will continue on the same path, with the same attitude, the same approach, and the same philosophy. Or, and in this case, I think Egypt will be in big trouble. Or if this attitude changes to one that is based on achieving broad consensus in order to allow us to reach a draft constitution that we can be all proud of and present to the Egyptian people for approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're always eloquent in any language, so thank you very much. And I think you're getting a taste of the kind of very rich discussions that we've been having all day. As someone who's pretty lay on this whole constitutional debate, I keep on going from side to side as I hear these views. Talking of which, Hossam, over to you, please.
Okay, thank you very much. Since the event was only advertised in English, I'm going to stick to the working language, but I'll be happy to switch perhaps in the Q&A part, and I appreciate the invitation and thank Brookings Doha Center for organizing this event. I should also apologize for this unfortunate maleness of our panel. I know that it was not on account of the organizers, who I know worked very hard to ensure better gender representation. But I do feel that I need to apologize, especially as I'm going to, as usual, complain about the severe underrepresentation of women in the constitution drafting process. So I should start by that. Perceptions, as Ambassador Hisham said, are extremely important, but they also vary when it comes to how we see the function of the constitution, how we see this as a juncture in our transition. I'm one of the many that believe that drafting and adopting Egypt's first constitution is not an inconvenience or an annoyance or a step on the way that we need to overcome, get rid of, to get to real business and in the name of stability. I am one of those that believe that the new constitution is a crucial step in our transition. It is a test of this new democratic process. But more importantly, perhaps for the current government, it is through the management of the rest of this process and the correction of its course or lack thereof that the legacy of President Morsi is going to be colored. President Morsi is going to be remembered perhaps most by how this process concludes. And that is a message that we never tire of delivering to the president and his team. And, of course, a test for this new experiment of having an Islamist president and an Islamist dominated government. I am one of those that expected when we unseated Mubarak in February, when we woke up the next day not knowing what was waiting for us under SCAF, I was the military council that ruled Egypt until July, that the new constitution is going to be a process of national debate, national healing as well, and a process through which we build or rebuild the political system, redefine the relations of wealth and power, and also establish firm guarantees of never again. Guarantees that would prevent the recurrence or reemergence of practices of the past. And so from this prism, I fundamentally disagree with Mr. Dr. Darragh in that I do not see this as a step or a bitter medicine that we just need to swallow and move on with our lives. I think this is very important. It deserves as much time as it needs, and it deserves to be taken much more seriously than I wrote down what Mr. Darragh said, that it is important to produce the constitution at the minimum standard that we can achieve or that we can reach. I fundamentally disagree with this view. We were pleased to see that the majority party and the president finally came to realize what a crisis we are having. We waited and waited for weeks and months for the president to step in and offer a political initiative that recognizes that the process is not going well. And finally, we had this in the last couple of weeks when the president decided to meet with those that ran against him in the elections and representatives of revolutionary youth movements and different political parties, women's groups, etc., in order to discuss how to get out of this crisis. And the crisis, as you know now, escalating because what comes out of these meetings is an insistence on the same priority that we heard from the Secretary General, which is stability. And yesterday, Al-Ahram, in keeping with its long tradition of being the mouthpiece of whoever is in power, came out with the headline, the front page headline of the president telling one of those delegations that what Egypt needs now is an urgent constitutional stability. So it doesn't seem like these meetings, unfortunately, have resulted yet in a way out of the crisis. And as a result, of course, yesterday, as most of you know, almost one-third of the members of the current Constituent Assembly suspended their... that is debatable. Announced that they are suspending their membership, or at least not boycotting meetings, further meetings of the Constituent Assembly, waiting for a resolution. Another manifestation of the crisis is that the small technical advisory committee that was appointed by the chair of the Constituent Assembly in order to reflect perhaps better representation and diversity of views just announced the resignation of all members yesterday, except for two law professors that remain, in protest of their conviction that role is just to provide a cover for the lack of diversity in the Constituent Assembly, and that their views are not being taken forward, that they were not even allowed to brief the general floor of the Constituent Assembly. So, in short, of course, if I'm asked to assess the process so far, I would say the process has been severely mismanaged primarily anti-democratic. And that is how we got to where we are right now. I agree with the diagnosis given by Ambassador Hisham Youssef. What is tragic about this diagnosis is that none of those elements was necessary, that it is not a coincidence or a glitch in the process, that all the powers made their own bed and took steps that got us to where we are right now. And I say all the powers because there is enough blame to go around for everyone, for all the parties. But of course, I also say that the Freedom and Justice Party take bigger responsibility, being the majority party. So let me just brief remarks without getting into detail in the interest of time. I am, again, one of those that believe that it is impossible to understand how we got to where we are right now without talking about the composition of the Constituent Assembly. I do not think that it is going back, and I do not think that it is a distraction or a waste of our time to discuss the composition, because the composition for me was a bundle of birth defects that gave us what we have right now, the creature that we have right now. And when I say the creature, I mean both the Assembly and its multiple drafts ending in the latest draft of November the 11th. There were conscious decisions made by the majority in Parliament where they refused to establish objective criteria for who gets to be among the 100 people that will write the Constitution. This was a conscious decision. There were many initiatives. We had one of those initiatives to say, let's not discuss names. Let's not discuss Islamist versus non-Islamist. Let's discuss, who do we need to see represented on this body, for this body to be seen as inclusive, diverse, representative, and therefore credible. The response we got was an astounding no, that there was no appetite for establishing criteria. There was more appetite for selecting names, for pre-selecting names. And we all remember the very sad scene that unfortunately we had to watch live on TV of the joint meeting of the elected members of the Shura and People's Assembly coming together with most of the members of the majority parties in both bodies, coming with a pre-prepared, pre-printed page that had all the names that they needed to copy into their forms while selecting the 100 members. So they arrived at the meeting with a list that was already prepared, and the meeting that was supposed to be the very first discussion of criteria of who gets to sit on this assembly. As a result, of course, we had the failure of the first assembly, which was dissolved by court, and then we had the sad turning point when the Supreme Military Council, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, brought the parties together and reached what was hailed to us then, what was advertised as a breakthrough. And the breakthrough was that the Islamists have agreed to take 50 seats and give non-Islamists 50 seats. And that was when the process was broken beyond repair. That was when the only criteria for who gets to sit on the assembly was you can only pick one box to sit in. You're either an Islamist or you're with the others. And I appreciate that Mr. Darragh is unhappy about this because he sees his identity as fluid and he sees himself as an Islamist, liberal, leftist, etc., sitting in more than one box. But unfortunately, that was completely divorced from the reality of how even this bad deal was implemented. When we came to the implementation of this, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafis decided that Al-Azhar should belong to the secular camp, that the 50 seats are not going to include Al-Azhar, that the church is going to be in the secular camp because the 50 seats are not for the Islamists, that the Wasat party and others, all of these have to be seats to be taken away from the secular camp. All seats designated to state institutions, so representatives of the police, representative of the military, all of these have to come from the 50 secular seats. And then it became clear in the implementation that the agreement to have 50 Islamists versus 50 non-Islamists actually meant 50 seats for the Freedom and Justice Party and the Noor Party and 50 seats for everyone else. And linking the results of the parliamentary elections to the composition of the Constituent Assembly was another contribution to the destruction, to the complete destruction of the process, in my view at least, that we're coming to see right now. Of course, there were insistence, both in the first assembly and the second, to stack the assembly with elected members of parliament. That opened the door to the first court ruling that dissolved the Constituent Assembly. Again, surprisingly, in the second Constituent Assembly, we saw the same attempt to include 40 elected members of parliament as among the 100. Which again opened the door to another court challenge, and that court challenge that is still pending right now is the main element that created this time race, the time race to finish a draft, any draft, as soon as possible before there is a court ruling dissolving the second parliament. When we got to look at the final body of the 100, we realized that we neither have an expert body of people who are there for their technical expertise, nor do we have a national representative body that is a body that is directly elected by the Egyptian people to represent all the different elements of society. Then we got to the first meetings. We realized that, again, that body decided to pick or to select rules of procedure that were undemocratic, to say the least. And then there was the refusal to establish a high threshold for agreement among the members on provisions before they are put to the public referendum. Again, we expected to see more from the majority, a bigger desire to achieve the highest possible degree of consensus. Unfortunately, there is now a 57% threshold that is required, and it's 57, not 60, not 55, and not 50, because the majority knows that they can have 57% if provisions are put to a vote. And again, I'd like to say that none of this was necessary. The majority party could have achieved a much more consensual process, a much more credible process, through using its majority, not despite of it. When to wrap up, I just want to say that everything we saw that was that was faulty about the composition then translated into the stages of the process as well as the draft that we see right now. In terms of the process, there were literally thousands of submissions, including from us, that were made to the Assembly. And we were making these submissions or sending people to attend hearings. We were invited to one hearing, and it's important to add the inverted commas, because we went to one meeting for civil society where there were representatives from the outreach committee, so not the General Assembly itself, and the meeting went exactly like this. Opening statement from the outreach committee saying, what would you like to see in Egypt's new constitution? And then going around the room where each participant spoke for 10 to 15 minutes, and then we were thanked and the committee left. And so most of the negotiations that took place in the different drafts actually happened in closed-door negotiations and deals. We did not see them on TV. The Constitution was not drafted live. And I have a list of names now of people that were chairs of committees that were complaining that there were changes being made to their own drafts outside of the committee. Members of the drafting committee were complaining that there were drafts being circulated inside the Assembly that did not come out of the drafting committee, and members of the advisory body saying every day they send us a new draft asking us for comments without explaining to us where this draft came from. And I have the list, and I'll be happy to share with you some examples, but I'm running out of time. So, you know, you look at the draft ultimately, and the draft is, you know, in the unlikely event that Mubarak had agreed in, you know, his late days to perhaps reform the system slightly, or maybe that Gamal Mubarak had become president and decided to maybe open up the system slightly, we would see a draft that looks like this. Yes, it is improved in some respect in comparison to 1971, but it also goes backward in many instances. And we can, again, in the Q&A time, go through examples of how this draft is actually worse in many aspects compared to the 71 Constitution. I would just describe the draft as simply pre-revolutionary, as actually attempting to restrict rights and regulate them more than to declare them and open them, and establishing the, a role for Al-Azhar, establishing a role for the military in Egypt in the political life that did not exist in the 1971 Constitution. So it even codifies some of the worst elements about the Mubarak time. Where do we go from here? Frankly, now, you know, everyone is at a loss. There are, you know, different scenarios. You know, one would be that we would have walkouts from the Assembly and alternate members promoted to replace them in a manner that would even further discredit the process. We could have a yes vote if it's put to the referendum, but, you know, you will not see Egyptians proudly queuing on the street for hours and hours like we saw in March of 2011 and you know, proudly showing the pink ink on their fingers because, you know, it is the process is going to be fairly divisive and polarizing. Or we could have a no vote that would severely discredit and weaken the president, and a weakened presidency in a country that is having its first democratically elected president is not something that would please me, and it's not something that is going to be in the interest of the country or in the interest of the transition. Or we can have a court ruling in December, a couple of weeks after the Constituent Assembly concludes its work, dissolving the Constituent Assembly. And then we have the president having to reappoint another Constituent Assembly according to the rules that he wrote into his own constitutional draft. Stability, as a result of what is happening right now, seems to be a very, very distant goal right now. I do not think that this process can result in long-term stability, and I also disagree that, you know, it would be easy afterwards to go back and change the Constitution, because this current Constituent Assembly, in this current draft, in order to change the Constitution, you need first a vote, a majority vote in Parliament, in the House of Representatives, on the principle of amending the Constitution, and then you need a two-third majority vote on the provisions of any constitutional amendment, of every single amendment. And that, again, is no coincidence. It would appear like the Constitution could be changed afterwards, but in fact, procedurally, it is virtually impossible to do this without meeting the 50 plus one and then a two-third majority. Thank you.
Thank you. Hussam, if it's any consolation, our last panel was all women. Thank you very much. And dare I say, you did speak for the younger generation, in any case. I won't ask questions. I want to throw the floor open straight away. As you can see, there are big stakes here. You've heard a variety of views, big stakes for Egypt and the entire region. And you've heard the debate on process, on substance, and on identity. I'd ask you to just tell us who you are, your affiliation, and your name. And if I could just ask you, please, to close your mobile phones if you haven't already done so. Particularly if you're Egyptian, I'd love to hear from you, as well as anyone else. And then we'll come round for another round. Okay, and we'll start with Dr. Omar, and then I'll come back to you.
Yeah, just a small comment. It's a complaint to the management of the seminar. Actually, I was very strict in abiding by my time. I took exactly 10 minutes as I was requested, and then the other distinguished speakers, they are very prominent speakers. Each one used half hour for explaining how bad this assembly is and how the constitution will be a disaster for Egypt. Of course, I could have spent hours and hours speaking otherwise, but this I feel that there is a kind of unfairness because I didn't have full chance of really explaining why I believe that the result is not as my respectful colleagues are saying. Of course, I'm not. I mean, they are free to express their opinions, but I don't think that it is fair to impose a feeling like this. But anyway, I hope that through the questions and answers, I can touch upon. I can be given a better chance to represent the assembly as I'm supposed to be. Okay.
Amar, I completely understand. You were going to get a little bit more time. Everyone took more than 10 minutes. I have that point in mind already. So thank you for pointing it out. And I suspect that you may hear some redress on the floor too. Doctor.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم في الحقيقه I'm going to speak in Arabic. Okay. انا سمعت بعض امور غريبه يعني من الاخ والاخ تقول 50% مسلمين و 50% غير مسلمين وبعدين تقول 50% وبعدين قلت سيكولرز احنا عندنا 50% علمانيين الحاجه الثانيه الاخ في الاخر قال 11000 قاضي باردون 11000 قاضي دكتور زكريا مطر okay. 11000 قاضي رافضين ده واحد فلول من بتوع مبارك والنائب العام مطلب من مطالب الثوره عندنا قضاء من اجل مصر زكريا عبد العزيز والقضاء فارجو ان الكلام يكون لانك انت هنا كلامك محسوب وانت كنت في السلك الدبلوماسي هذا كلام لك بان يقال انا لا وجهه نظر ثانيه ما يجري في مصر في الحقيقه ليس بين علمانيين هناك حزب إسرائيل بعد ما سقطت جمهورية شرم الشيخ وبقي حزب إسرائيل رجال أعمال المال الحرام بقنواتهم وكثير من الإعلام إعلامي السوء وآخره هؤلاء ضرب غزة الآن مرتبط مع ضرب السودان مرتبط مع القلاقل اللي بيسرها حزب إسرائيل في مصر ليست المشكلة بين علمانيين ومسلمين ولكن هناك من يريد تخريب مصر اللي احنا خدناها خرابة من المخلوع وشكرا
It is, yeah. Thank you. My name is Ahmed Baghdadi. I'm a researcher with the RAND Corporation in Doha. Thank you for sharing your insights. My question is basically to Mr. Baghdadi. Oh, okay. Hi, my name is Ahmed Baghdadi. My question is basically, Mr. Baghdadi and other speakers can definitely chime in. What is the best case scenario? What is the best way out of this? Thank you for providing a few options, but none of them sounds like a, you know, best case scenario.
Hi, my name is Sarah Hussein. I'm a Georgetown student. I'm an Egyptian. My question is to Dr. Amr Darragh. In terms of the elimination, or rather the modification of the article of 68 from the past constitution, it says that it will be modified from basic human rights to gender equality as long as it abides by the Islamic Sharia. Clearly, I think we can all agree that the Islamic Sharia is can be interpreted in different ways. And so how will this constitution guarantee women's rights? Because even through the past constitution, we've seen a lot of high sexual harassment.
My name is Hussam Gaber. Thanks a lot for the Brookings, and thanks a lot for the banners. My question is to Dr. Amr Darragh. As you from Al-Hurayan Adela party, and you mean that you are not in a Muslim Brotherhood side, and as I can see, you're trying to put all the Egyptians in corners by using the time constraint, we have to finish. This is the best what we can do and what we can achieve. And really, I'm surprised that you treated and you're thinking for a constitution as a temporary. It's not a temporary. We are looking at all constitutions. It has to stay for a long time. It's now there is a majority. And next time, if the majority is changed, it's ready to change the constitution. I think this is my questions.
Thank you very much. Gentleman in the front here. Here.
السلام عليكم حسن السيد أستاذ القانون الدستوري في كلية القانون جامعة قطر طبعا أنا أتمنى أن يعني تتاح الفرصة للأستاذ عمرو لأخذ بعض الملاحظات اللي أبداها الأستاذ حسام الجوهرية على الأقل منها والرد عليها لأن أثار الكثير من النقاط اللي ربما تحتاج إلى نقاط أستاذ حسام طبعا السؤال أن هو شيء جميل أن الواحد يفكر في النظرية كيف إعداد دستور جميل وجيد والكل يوافق عليه لكن في الواقع العملي هناك الكثير من المسائل اللي للأسف يعني تخيب الظن في الأخذ فيما نتمناه يعني في إعداد مثل هذه فإذا هناك كثير من الأشياء يجب أن نأخذها بعين الاعتبار من أهم هذه الأشياء اللي هو يعني التوافق على دستور معين الدستور مثل ما عرفنا ما ندرسه نحن في الكليات هو يحتوي على المبادئ الأساسية الجوهرية أما التفاصيل تأتي في القوانين فهذه المبادئ يفترض أن بالفعل أن يكون هناك عليها نوع من التوافق لكن أن 100% نصل إلى هذا التوافق هذا الشيء مستحيل فهذا هو الواقع أما الحلم أن الكل يعني يصل إلى هذا التوافق الإجماع يعني يصل إلى الإجماع إلى هذه النقطة هذه بس فقط كنت أبغي يعني نميز بين الواقع وبين الأحلام أو بين النظرية وبين بين الواقع شكرا
Osama Albay from Qatar Petroleum Public Relations. My question is that we all are aware of the condition and the history of education in Egypt and how religion was marginalized, has been marginalized. So we know that most of the people, they are not aware exactly or in detail about Islamic Sharia or about the religion in general. So has there been any attempt by your party to interpret what does it mean, Islamic Sharia? I mean, how will it apply in economy, in trade, education, health, human rights? Has there been any reference for people to judge whether those items are applicable or how they are they acceptable by the public or not? And why aren't the public involved in this? Why should they wait until there is a draft? And then you ask them for their opinion. Why not ask them about those controversial items. Thank you.
Take one more question here.
محمد عبد الباقي محامي. سؤال للدكتور للمهندس عمرو دراج. حضرتك في بداية كلامك يعني رميت الكرة في ملعب القوى المدنية باتهمهم بأنه اللعبة لعبة سياسية في المقام الأول، وأن قرب الانتخابات هي السبب المباشر أن كل تيار سياسي بيعلي من صوته. يعني اتكلمت على هذا الموضوع بشكل عام. أنا برمي الكرة في ملعبك تاني يا أستاذ عمرو في مسألة بسيطة خالص. أن الإخوان المسلمين أو حزب الحرية والعدالة، وأنا حاسس أنه لا فرق بينهم، فالإسلام عملة يعني وجهان لعملة واحدة، اختلاف في الأدوار واختلاف في التصريحات فقط. أن الإخوان المسلمين أو حزب الحرية والعدالة هو الذي يلعب هذه اللعبة السياسية الآن المتمثلة تحديدا في ملاطفة القوى السياسية الإسلامية الأخرى، صاحبة المليونية الشهيرة الجمعة الماضية الذي لم يرفع فيها على مصر.
Do you have a question, please?
السؤال الإخوان المسلمين القوى السياسية الوحيدة، أنا مختلف معهم لكن أحترمهم وأعترف أنهم قوة وطنية، يعني كان في نضال مشترك مع باقي القوى السياسية. لماذا تغير الإخوان المسلمين بعد أن ضمنوا السلطة، ولماذا هذا الاستمرار في محاولات التمكين من السلطة وعدم إعطاء باقي القوى السياسية المتمثلة في العلمانيين والليبراليين والاشتراكيين أي دور، بداية من تشكيل الجمعيات التأسيسية اللي حضرتك تحديدا اتكلمت على أن التأسيس بتاعها كان غلط في الأول 50% و50%، والأستاذ حسام تناول جانب مهم خالص أن باقي القوى السياسية حتى الأزهر والكنيسة تم وضعها في 50%، ولماذا هذا التصميم على الملاطفة وإظهار المودة للسلفيين من أجل الانتخابات القادمة؟ شكرا.
Thank you. Okay. Can I come back to you, Sami? I promise you. Let's start with Dr. Amar.
I got the largest share of questions. Yes. Besides, I have to comment on your word. First of all, I would like to ask you a question. How many of you have read the draft, maybe not necessarily the latest draft, but a draft of the Constitution that we have been issuing? Very good. Okay. The point I'm trying to make is that this is, by the way, here I find something like maybe 20 or 25% of the audience leading, which is a very good percentage. In many places that I go, I find a much lower percentage. People get their impression based on what they hear, not based on what they read. And I'm not referring to just to my or our side or the other side. I'm talking general. I mean, people who are pro Islamists, quote unquote, they get their impression from what we say and the other way around. What I would like each and every Egyptian to do is to go and carefully read the draft without the effect, without the noise of the media and of the political games that are being played, and just ask himself or herself, am I comfortable with this document or not? Okay, I claim that there will be a very large, a very high degree of satisfaction of the about the document. Let me give examples of the significant improvements that are there now for the documents. When we talk about freedoms and rights, we have two major contributions. The first one is that if you refer back to 1971 Constitution, you will always find a qualifying statement at the end of the article, always taking you to the reference of the law, in accordance with the law. This such right is practiced in accordance with law such and such, which means that when the law is being put, there is a possibility, there is a very high degree of possibility to preempt that law from its real meaning. And that was really the case. This is what was happening. There were great words in 1971 Constitution, but legislation in many, many incidents really made these words meaningless at the end of the day when it comes to practice. In the current draft, in most locations where we did not really have a need to refer to the law, we simply did not refer to the law. We just state the right. For the Egyptians, there is the right of so-and-so, the right of so-and-so, without reference to the law. And when we had to refer to the law, we changed the wording to from in accordance to the law is maybe as detailed by the law or you know something like that, which indicates that the prevailing wording is for the Constitution, not for the law, as should really be the case. This is a major achievement. The other thing is the introduction of a set of freedoms and rights that simply were not there in previous constitutions. The right of access to information, for example, by any citizen. This is a new right that is newly introduced. The right for having good quality education. In the previous constitution, there was reference to the right of education. And when it comes to the application, you all know that we had classes having more than 100 students stacked in that class, and you cannot call that education. But in the current draft, we refer to good quality education. This is really what we are looking for. Healthcare facilities, the right for housing, the right for a clean environment, the rights of if someone is detained for any suspicion of committing a certain crime, what happens? What are his rights? How he guarantees that he's not humiliated in a police station? And this is actually, we had a reasonable amount of detailing in that particular article because we really wanted not to leave anything to the law to restrict the rights of anyone of fair treatment when being detained. So there are so many, if you go and go over the document, you'll find a lot of these examples. When it comes to the balance of power between the executive power and the legislative power. Of course, we all suffered from the practices of the president related to the old regime and the previous presidents. As a matter of fact, of kings and pharaohs, you know, back in the Egyptian history. In the new constitution, we are, of course, the president still has the power to appoint the prime minister, but this government has to pass the confidence in the parliament. So the president is not free to appoint whatever government he likes. And if the government does not get this confidence, he can propose another one. If it doesn't get confidence, he can call for a referendum to dissolve the parliament. And if the result of the referendum is positive, the parliament is dissolved. If it is negative, the president will have to resign. This is an example of also of the balance of power that was achieved, you know, just to make sure that both the president and the parliament work together in order to come up with an acceptable government. We all know that we have democracy now with a very good extent in Egypt, and there is a very our president just passed by 52%. So there is a very, very big possibility that we have a president from a certain political background, and we have the majority of the parliament from another political background. So this chance is there. So we have to have a mechanism to make sure that this balance of power is maintained. When my colleagues here refer to 11,000 judges going and objecting, which is actually is not the case. I don't know how we all these people gathered in one place. But anyway, suppose that this was the case, and women said so and so, and those people said so and so, and then the assembly bowed to that pressure and took this into account into the drafting. So how do we get blamed for that? Actually, this is specifically what we had the draft for. This is the interaction process with the society. If we get the feedback from the society that this group of people would like something to be there, and we take this into account, is this something to be blamed for or to be appraised for? This is actually the kind of interaction that we were looking for. If we didn't listen to these people, I mean, why did we have the interaction? When I said that I don't think that we have a perfect document, I didn't say that we have a bad document. The document is not perfect, as the gentleman here said. It's impossible to have 100% consensus on all issues. This is not the nature of things. Allah in Quran says, وَلَا يَزَلُونَ مُخْتَلِفِينَ. يعني الاختلاف, the differences are part of the sunnah of this universe. So it's impossible to have 100% consensus. It's impossible to have the request of each and every person implemented in the constitution. The thing is that we would like to have some sort of something that is acceptable to build on. About changing the constitution in future, definitely this has to be difficult. There is nowhere, I mean, look at the process of changing the American constitution, for example, or any other constitution. It cannot be simple. It cannot be just by 10 representatives or few parliament members ask for that and it's granted. This has to be a difficult process. But it should not be a prohibitive process. So there has to be a balance. Initially, we proposed a minimum number of years before we proposed change of 5 years or 10 years. We took this out. Yes, there should be some majority in order to start this process. Definitely. I mean, this is the way constitutions are. When we talk about Article 68, that there was reference here for it. I will explain that. Article 68 talks about that the state has to guarantee equality, full equality between men and women in all aspects of life, political, economical, social, and whatever, but not in contradiction with the rulings of Islamic Sharia. That was the statement. Okay? People were portraying this as if this was the introduction of Salafis and the Muslim Brotherhood in the new constitution. I'm sure many of you think this way. But the truth is that this is an article that used to be in 1971 constitution. This is not a new article. Before, there were Salafis or Ikhwan or anybody contributing to the drafting of the constitution. So why was it there? First of all, we have another article clearly stating that no one can discriminate between any citizen based on religion or sex or ethnic background or whatever. So this is a general one that is actually sufficient, that is enough in order to assure full equality. If there is something extra to give extra assurance for women to be equal to men, we all know that there are aspects in the detailed rulings of Islamic Sharia, some aspects that you cannot have 100% equality. We all know that. When it comes to inheritance, for example, women sometimes inherit less than a man, than men, and sometimes inherit more than men. How can we issue laws that contradict this? This is our Sharia. We cannot contradict. I mean, in other countries, this can be the case. But in Egypt, which is where people accept, everybody accepts, and they have been doing this for years and years, how can we change the basis that the society was built about to issue a law that contradicts with the rulings of inheritance, for example, or the marriage laws or divorce laws? So there should have been and must have been a qualifying statement saying that this equality is fine, is granted, but not to contradict with the rulings of Islamic Sharia. That was logical, and that was introduced again back in 1971. Now, when all this debate took place, then came the suggestion that, well, we, according to the other article, equality is really granted. So why do we need to introduce another article and debate about it? And so the decision was, and again by consensus, that this article was taken away, out. So everybody is happy right now. And speaking about consensus, it seems, you know, a lot of people who are objecting about what's coming out of the assembly right now, by the way, they are not one-third of the members. I will count them with you when we go back to the hotel. But anyway, this is not the thing. That we had a mechanism to agree or to discuss the major disagreements, the major differences. And on all issues, I repeat, all issues, we had agreements, we reached agreements, written agreements, and signed. We all signed to these agreements, and I have these documents. But then people go out and say we did not accept that after they signed. So this is what I refer to as a political game. I did not just blame the quote unquote civil political powers. I'm also blaming the others. The same thing happened with Salafis for some issues, for example. Because it was like a playground that politics is being played, you know, rather than really concentrating on producing the constitution. But the document is really not as it is tried to be portrayed. And I'm inviting you. I mean, you listened to opinions of people. I may be for the document because I worked very hard to produce it. Don't believe me. Just go yourself and read the document word by word. If you find something that is really striking to you, raise your voice high and object. If you are comfortable with maybe 80 or 85% of the articles, fine. Okay, this is a very good start to build on. But we cannot keep on running in circles all the time. We have to move forward. There has to be a start for our country to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll get the question in from Sami and then come back again.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Sami Zeidan, Al Jazeera. I have, first of all, a question for Ambassador Hisham. Could you please elaborate what exactly you find unacceptable in the draft constitution so far? I know you gave some general, perhaps you didn't have enough time, but you gave some general categories when it comes to human rights, democracy, balance of power. Can you elaborate a little more what specific articles of the constitution of the draft constitution you find conflict with that? For Hassan Bahget, can you? I know you didn't want to get too much into it, but could you explain why you or some people find it objectionable for there to be members of parliament or people nominated by members of the parliament in the constituent assembly? I understand the legal argument, but please put that one aside, that the court has already found that not acceptable. But in a matter of principle, what's wrong with that if the parliament was elected by the people? And for Amr Darragh, could you please respond to all the points, and could he be given enough time so we can hear his perspective, that Ambassador Hisham hopefully will raise specific issues, how you disagree with him and don't see that the Constitution is diverting people's rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've got about 10 minutes, so we're going to have to keep these answers fairly brief. And just to add to my own woes regarding timing, is there any particular question that either of you in Washington would want to raise? We can hear you. We can hear you. Just please go ahead. You need to turn off the mute button.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Can you hear me?
We got
now?
You. Yeah. Just one quick brief question, please.
Yes. A question about the process of the Constitution. Has there been any consideration given to, after this draft is done, submitting it to the next elected parliament for approval? That would seem to solve the legal status question of the assembly, and it would also resolve the very anomalous situation that you have now of having an unelected appointed body drafting a constitution with no approval process foreseen by any sort of elected body, which in terms of international practice is extremely unusual.
Thank you very much. As I said, we started a little bit late, so we've got about 10 minutes. I'll start with you, Ambassador Hisham.
Shukran. لم يقل أحد أن المطلوب هو الوصول إلى توافق 100% حول مشروع الدستور. فأعتقد أن احنا نتفق جميعا أن هذا غير ممكن. إنما التوافق والاختلاف لهم درجات. المهم هو أن نصل إلى أعلى درجة ممكنة من التوافق بين القوى السياسية على الساحة المصرية. هذا هو المطلوب. عندما استجابت الجمعية التأسيسية لمطالب بعض المنظمات الخاصة بحقوق المرأة تم الترحيب بذلك من جانب الجميع. وبالتالي والأخ عمرو يعلم هذا تمام العلم. موضوع القضاء أنا سأرسل لسيادتك وسأرسل للأخ عمرو كافة المراجع اللي خاصة بهذا الموضوع. والمسألة تتعلق بمدى جدية الاختلاف. هذه هي رسالة. الرسالة مرتبطة بجدية الاختلاف. القضاء مجموعة كبيرة جدا من القضاء بما في ذلك كافة أعضاء المجلس الأعلى للقضاء أصدر بيانا يؤكد فيه عدم موافقته على جوانب مرتبطة بالجزء الخاص بالقضاء في مشروع الدستور. ولكن ما يحزنني هو أننا عندما نختلف نقول أن هذا الشخص من حزب إسرائيل. هذا كلام غير مقبول. نستطيع أن نتفق على ما نريد ونختلف على ما نريد، ولكن الحوار يجب أن يكون بأسلوب مختلف. من حقك أن تعترض على كل ما أقول، ولا ضرر ولا ضرار في ذلك، ولكن الأمور لها أساليب للتعبير عن مثل هذه الاختلافات. الجمعية التأسيسية والوزير محسوب قال منذ أيام أنهم ينتظرون فيما يتعلق بموضوع القضاء على سبيل المثال ملاحظات القضاء حتى يعملوا على أخذها في الاعتبار. هذا كله ما هو مطلوب. وبالتالي المسألة ليست مسألة أننا نواجه كارثة. المسألة ليست مسألة كارثة، ولكن مسألة في الوقت المتبقي هل سنتمكن من بناء التوافق الذي يسمح بقبول أكبر عدد ممكن من المصريين لهذه المسودة، نعم أم لا. وهناك اعتراضات وملاحظات على درجة كبيرة من المهنية، وأرجو لمن يريد أن يطلع على مقالين للمستشار طارق البشري نشر في الشروق منذ أيام يتحدث عن مواد بعينها ومقترحات محددة لصياغات محددة حول ما يزيد عن 15 أو 20 مادة، وبها الكثير مما يدعونا للتفكير. منها على سبيل المثال تحدث عن حرية تداول المعلومات مقابل حق تداول المعلومات، واستبدال كلمة حرية وكلمة حق، وأيهما أفضل ولماذا. وتحدث عن مسائل مرتبطة بتفاصيل دقيقة جدا في مشروع الميثاق الدستور اسم. منها إقرارات الذمة المالية، من يقدم إقرارات الذمة المالية من عائلة الرئيس، وهل يستطيع الرئيس أن يفرض عليه ذلك أم لا، وهكذا. وبالتالي الموضوعات بالفعل لها أبعاد مختلفة وهناك آراء مختلفة، وهذا يثري العملية. وكل ما تحدث به البعض عن أن الأمر كما ذكر الأخ عمرو دباغ لم نكن نتوقع أن الأمر سيتطلب استغراق كل هذا الوقت، إنما ما حدث أننا رأينا اختلافات بين قوى سياسية من منطلقات مختلفة، منها كما ذكر لأسباب سياسية ترتبط بانتخابات ولا ترتبط بمصالح حقيقية. مهمتنا أن نرى كيف نتعامل مع هذه الأمور بما يحقق مصلحة مصرية. والنقاش ومنطلق هذا النقاش هو المصلحة المصرية وليس أي شيء آخر. وهذا هو ما يجب أن نحترم في الحوار فيما بيننا.
Thank you. Hussam, you were specifically asked about why is it objectionable to have MPs, and if you want to cover some of the other ground just quickly, please.
I'll start with a direct question from Sami Zidane. I have no objection about having MPs sit on the Constituent Assembly. I have serious objections about the lack of objective criteria about who gets to sit on the Constituent Assembly. So had Parliament actually, or the joint meeting of elected members of both houses of Parliament as required, met and decided that, you know, the criteria is there shall be 20 members of Parliament, 10 representatives of civil society, 5 representatives of judicial bodies, etc., we would have had absolutely no objection. So the political objection is that members of Parliament took the lion's share of a constituent assembly that is now neither an expert body, as I said, of jurists or law professors, nor is it a body that is composed according to objective criteria. My more serious objection is that the court had already found that this was in violation of the language of the constitutional declaration and the law. And by repeating the same mistake knowingly, it opened the second constituent assembly to the legal challenge that resulted in voiding any possibility of having a real debate, because I'm not exaggerating. We were actually attending hearings. The Constituent Assembly was conducting hearings with, you know, different parties about the Constitution while the drafting committee was rushing to finish the draft so that it's made public before the court rules. So there was a complete divorce and disconnect between the consultation process and the drafting because of this legal challenge and the time race that it resulted in. Okay, I'll try to just group some of the comments very quickly here. Again, the reason I started with a difference in approach and perspective is that, you know, we had a revolution and, you know, we had friends and colleagues that died in the course of this revolution and we unseated a dictator. After 30 years in power, we had certain expectations from the Constitution, the first Constitution to follow, as well as the process of writing that Constitution. But I assure you, sir, Dr. Hassan, these were not dreams and were not theoretical ideas. I have an advanced degree in international law, and we really did our homework. We closely, before our revolution even, were involved in the drafting of the Kenyan constitution after their elections. We closely followed the process of drafting the Nepal constitution following the dissolution of the monarchy. And we spent the last year, you know, talking to people from Argentina and from Chile and from Indonesia and from Spain and from Eastern Europe about, you know, what should go into writing a new constitution. We made a detailed submission to the Constituent Assembly to Parliament following the court ruling dissolving the first assembly, proposing some objective criteria that would at least contribute to a perception of credibility, because credibility is important in itself, but the perception of credibility is even more important. We agreed with the Facebook page with the largest membership in Egypt, we are all Khalid Said, Kulina Khalid Said Facebook group, to actually endorse and promote these principles, collect signatures on them, and we made a big submission with signatures saying these are some criteria to avoid another discredited process. And throughout the process, we made written submissions to the Constituent Assembly. We had one-on-one meetings, both with members as well as with chairs of committees, because we wanted this process to work, and we still want to see a real process result in a satisfactory result. because we had these expectations and because we looked at these drafts, but also members of the assembly looked at these drafts. So, sir, I agree with you. Some constitutions are, you know, have general principles and then refer to laws for details, but some don't, really. I mean, since the Arab region had a wave of constitutions in the 70s and afterwards, there's been 40 years. In the 40 years, constitutional thinking has evolved significantly. One of the drafts that the members of the assembly received was the Brazilian draft, where because of the military dictatorship history, there was a realization that we don't only need language on rights, but we need mechanisms for enforcement. There is now an established principle to, you know, have at least a few rights established as non-derogable, not subject to any limitation. There are general principles about what could be permissible limitations on the exercise of rights and freedom, that the limitation needs to be proportionate and necessary to achieve a legitimate goal, and that, you know, it cannot be discriminatory. It cannot have a discriminatory effect. It has to be prescribed in law. These languages are now in world constitutions. Unfortunately, because the members of the body lacked both the credibility coming from representation and diversity and the technical expertise, the process was hijacked by very old legal professors and jurists and judges that, even though some of them were against Mubarak, but they were completely wedded to Egypt's legal tradition. And so when you talk to them, the first statement you hear is, Egypt has a very, very long constitutional history. Egypt wrote the constitutions for all the region. Why should we actually look at other constitutions? We know how to write constitutions. We wrote constitutions for Arab countries. And we're like, yes, exactly, look around you. You know, you wrote the constitutions for the rest of the region. But, you know, that point is a bit lost on them. And the experts got us to the point where we are right now. And yes, I said there are some improvements. The introduction of the word Gauda in the article on education is important, that we now have quality. There are moves backward. Now we have a constitution that establishes for the first time, Mubarak did not do this, establishes that the Ministry of Defense has to be an army officer currently serving, establishes that the military budget shall not be discussed in parliament, even in closed camera, even in closed room, establishes that, you know, the establishes a composition of the National Defense Council with, you know, arguably 8 military and 7 civilians, if I'm generous, if I consider the Minister of Interior a civilian, and grudgingly. And we have a body of 40 appointed, unelected, Sunni male members of Hayat Kibar al-Ulama, the body of senior jurists, that shall be consulted on any matter related to Islamic Sharia that never existed in 1,000 years of having Al-Azhar. So there are ways, and even the new concept, so the provision of access to information, and God knows I worked very hard on this, on access to information, in the Constitution it says without contravening national security. So when we get to the law, I expect, just like we did when we had the FGP majority parliament, when FGP agreed with us on a law, the Ministry of Interior, Military and Intelligence said this law shall not apply to us. So you can have your laws, but this is now, and now that's written even inside the Constitution. With now the provision that interprets what the principles of Sharia are, and I was hoping one of you would actually compliment me for having not mentioned Sharia once in my opening remarks, because I don't think that this is the issue, really. But in the principle now that has been added to satisfy the Salafis explaining Sharia, the principles of Sharia shall include or do include the sources of Sharia, which does not make sense. It's against common sense. It's linguistically, it doesn't work because the principles are derived from the sources, not the other way around. But now we have the principles include the sources of Sharia.
I hate to stop you in full swing. I know we can go for a very long time on this.
Just one question I know you're giving the floor to Mr. Am, so I have a question to him to conclude. You said, sir, that constitutions are extremely important, that we must make it very difficult to amend them, and the best way to do this is to establish a two-third majority. Why won't you accept a two-third majority in the Constituent Assembly?
Okay. I'll start with the question from our colleague in Washington. Maybe she doesn't really know she doesn't have the information. But the Constitution will not have to be approved by the Parliament. this will go in a public referendum to be approved by the people, by the Egyptian people. And the other thing is that the assembly, yes, it was not elected, it was selected by the parliament, but actually that was assessed to be better than having to elect the General Assembly, because this, if this had been the case, it would reflect a picture that is very similar to what we had in the parliament. In other words, a majority towards Islamist parties, which is not desirable in representing a constitution. So in a way, that was really intentional, not to end up with this situation. But the constitution at the end of the day will be approved by the people in a public referendum. When it comes to the taking into account the comments the comments received by the assembly, of course, as I said, we received thousands and maybe tens of thousands of comments, and some of them, of course, could not be taken into account simply because of, you know, they are just a huge amount of comments. But I can give you, I have tables. I'm an engineer, so I worked out this myself. We have tables that reflect, that summarizes the suggestions, and we made sure that these comments were transferred to the, yes, the committees were working parallel without listening to the people. That's right. Although some of the committees did have hearings. But we made sure that a summarized versions of the comments reach the committees at further stages. So there was as much as possible, as much as we could absorb, we could introduce these comments in the process. About there is a misconception that there was a court ruling dissolving the first constituent assembly. This is not the case. Actually, the court ruling was to suspend the first one to examine whether it is legal or not, and actually there was no ruling till now to rule with this or against this. So I'm just correcting a piece of information. That was just a suspension. But the decision by everybody was not to ignore this and go ahead with a second assembly to avoid further debate on the issue. About some of the issues that Hussein referred to, for example, about the army and referring to specifying somebody belonging to the army to be a Minister of Defense. And we were debating about this morning, and what I said is that this is not just related to the army. It is related to all institutions in Egypt. You cannot have a Minister of Higher Education not being a university professor. You cannot have a Minister of Health not being a doctor. You cannot have a Minister of Interior not being a police officer. This has been the tradition in Egypt for tens of years. We are hoping within the coming few years to gradually change this to introducing politicians as ministers. You know, to have a minister of education and in the next cabinet he or she become the Minister of Defense, for example, like we see in many countries. And this is the real democratic process. But this is something that we need to have some time in order to reach. And in all experiences related to civil-military relationship, everybody unanimously said that the transition has to be very gradual. Nobody can afford to have a sudden change or an abrupt change. And actually in Egypt we have managed to have a tremendous development by setting the military aside from interfering into civilian and political life, what happened in the 12th of August. We still need a few more years in order to assure a safe and better transition for the military-civilian relations. The introduction of the explanation of the word principles in the Constitution was not to satisfy Salafists. Again, that was a proposal initially made by a liberal. And I'm not going to say who that is, but he's well known. He said, who has the privilege of interpreting the principles of Islamic Sharia? So we would like to have this defined. somebody suggested Al-Azhar. At the end of the day, we ended up with a definition that is agreed upon by the ulama in Egypt. So that was actually to please both parties and everybody, actually, rather than having to revert to Al-Azhar each and every incident. There is a need for an explanation for the principles, whether this is compatible with the principles or not. A definition that is well acceptable is introduced, not just to please Salafis, as Hossam referred to.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's a testimony to all three of you that nobody left. We've gone way over time. I do want to thank you for the breadth and depth of our discussion, for openly debating, as you have. We call this particular discussion Drafting the Constitution, Defining Post-Revolutionary Egypt. I suspect that we're still working on defining it, given the debate that we've had just now. It will be very, very interesting to see over the next few weeks where this debate goes, and what kind of constitution that Egypt produces, either very soon or perhaps a little bit later. I guess that will be hopefully up to the people to decide in the end. Let me say to you that the whole thing has been taped by Al Jazeera Mubashir, and I recommend that we all watch it again. For the knowledge and depth that we've heard today regarding this subject. Finally, let me just say thank you very much to our three esteemed panelists, Dr. Ahmed Araj, Hossam Baghdad, and Ambassador Hisham Youssef. I'm sure we'd want to show our appreciation. I also thank you for your listening and for your participation. Thank you very much.